Radio.
Arguments are not going to attract people. Winning is going to attract people.
Radio.
The Poor People's Riot, as they call it, was necessary, it was reasonable, and it was just.
Radio.
And if you get in my way to make sure that that man gets housing, or that he gets enough to eat, I will move you.
Radio.
Okay.
Friday. Hello and welcome to OCAP Radio for Friday, February 19th. It is the eve. If you've been watching, the Olympics are on. No one is illegal, just reported on that. There's a lot of fabulous resistance going on there, bringing up important issues of poverty and housing in Vancouver and the ridiculousness of the circus that's going on there. If you'd like more information on that, you should go to mostlywater.org. They have a lot of links for that. And once again, as every week, I'm going to talk about OCAP and the shoestring budget OCAP subsists on month to month. If you'd like to help sustain or donate to OCAP, you should head to OCAP.ca, and there's a couple of ways you can do that on there. And if you're interested in what's going on with OCAP, again, checking out OCAP.ca will give you the information on that. And for today's show, this evening, we're going to have an interview done by Kelly Bentley with Deb Singh from the Toronto Rape Crisis Center. They're going to be talking about the work that's done there and the importance of that. And that will be our show. And at the end, we'll be doing some announcements. So, Kelly, did you want to say hi and say anything about this?
It's a very interesting interview. Deb Singh is very knowledgeable on the TRCC, and she's going to talk about some of the stuff that she does, and we get into a discussion about calling someone a victim versus calling someone a survivor, so it's very interesting, and yeah, that's all.
Okay, here we go.
So I'm here today with Deb Singh from the Toronto Rape Crisis Center, and we will be discussing what the Toronto Rape Crisis Center does, its history, and some of the services it provides. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Okay, so I guess I'll just start by saying, tell us about the Rape Crisis Center, your services, and your history.
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah.
The center was started in 1974, so 36 years this year. It really started off as a collective of women who wanted to support survivors. Sort of the story we tell people is when Barbara Shuckler was killed, Take Back the Night and the center started in Toronto. So women were appalled by the fact that the media covered it in such a lackadaisical way, and also the places where women fear for their lives, right? And fear not even when violence is happening to us, i.e. walking the streets at night, i.e. Just general levels of how the world sees sexual assault, and of course, how the center and the women who started the center wanted to make this a way of talking about the institutionalized violence that women experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the center started with some of these things, of course with the death and murder of Barbara Shuckler. The center still runs as a collective, so that means there is no boss. We are the employer and the employee. We run under consensus-based collective structures. We also run from identity politics. And I think the number one thing I can say about the center is we run from a place of survivors, the best one, women are the best ones, to know what's best for ourselves around making decisions. So as counselors, as advocates, and as activists, we lead from the place of a survivor-centered center.
Mm-hmm.
So that also means that we ourselves identify as survivors, and that means that we know that survivors are the best ones to make decisions for themselves around their own healing. So that means that women come into the center and look to us for support, options, the ability to advocate from our positions, and general levels of the multiple different places where oppression is happening,
mm-hmm.
we support around that. So for instance, survivors come into the center for counseling, but she might also be coming into the center because she's a non-status woman and she needs support around deportation and application stuff for immigration. She might also be street involved or have, be a user or just generally support around anything. Could be CAS, could be, you know. So those places we see the multiple different levels of identity when women survivors come into the center. And also, that being said, we're also a huge place where we support and train other women to support other women. So that means volunteers on the crisis line, volunteers who support women around court accompaniment or, you know, deportation hearing accompaniment, immigration hearing accompaniment, family court accompaniment, all those different places. We train women as well as we support women who are going through that. So, like, while some women enter the organization as survivors, a lot of women stay on and become volunteers, become advocates in different ways for other survivors. Yes, that makes sense.
That does make sense. So can you speak a little bit more about, you said that you do work around identity, and what does that mean exactly? Like identity politics?
Mm-hmm. For us, it's really important for women to self-identify in all multiple different ways. For us, we see it as pivotal and important for Black women, women of color, women with different disabilities, LGBT women, to identify and be at the center of planning and supporting the work we do around survivorship, right? So that is to say that lesbians, women with different disabilities, Black women, women of color, we have a Latin American women's program at the center as well, so I'll be over and over talking about the multiple services that we provide for women. Mm-hmm. But all these identities, women of these identities, trans women, it's important for these perspectives to be at the center of how we do the work. And also to be able to make our services not a one-size-fits-all service. So. And for us, it's not just about our services, but about how we do activism around the anti-violence, anti-rape movement in the community. So for us, being able to identify from these places as staff women, for survivors to identify from these places, for volunteers to identify these places, this is how we make the work actually useful for the ones who, for us who are experiencing this violence, number one, and number two, how to do activism work or any anti-rape movement from those places, right? So it's, for us, it's not just about including these different identities, but rather creating a central place where these perspectives are at the center, and these perspectives are at the center of doing activism around anti-violence work. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so like, for example, if I was an immigrant woman and I wanted to do work as an immigrant woman, activist work as an immigrant woman, what would be an example of something in terms of identity politics that you've done that's directly related to a particular identity, like activism around gay and lesbians, activism around immigrant rights? Is there anything specific you can get as an example of that, just so people can
have a clear understanding?
Yeah.
For sure. So that being said, we don't compartmentalize things.
Yes.
Right? We're obviously many things at many times.
That's right.
So, you know, if a volunteer or a survivor, you know, a woman calling the line or a woman coming into counseling, was looking for support, mm-hmm. that could come in many different ways. If she was a survivor, identified as such. If she was a Spanish-speaking woman, she could engage in counseling and advocacy and support in the Spanish language. If she was an immigrant woman and coming and looking for support around being a survivor, she could access counseling. She could also access advocacy. Say she was applying for permanent residence, refugee, maybe she wasn't applying for anything at all, maybe she was a non-status woman. Again, we're very much on the don't ask, don't tell policy. We're linked with, known as legal shelter sanctuary status campaign. But she could access support around all those things, whether it was letter writing, advocacy, support, accompaniment to hearings, court dates, etc. If she was an immigrant woman who was coming from a place of wanting to involve herself in the work of the center, i.e. being a volunteer, there's multiple places. If she's a woman of color, we would hope that she would engage around our work in caucus and group work. We do a lot of work around understanding our privilege in terms of privilege groups, mm-hmm. and understanding our privilege, our oppression in terms of oppression groups. We call them group and caucus. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for us, it's really important to also engage the fact that, like, women of all different identities can engage in all different kinds of work, but we understand places where if you're a woman of color, you're going to engage the work from a different place than a woman who's a white woman, right? You're also going to engage the work different as a lesbian than perhaps a queer person than perhaps a straight person, right? Mm-hmm. So for us, it's really about negotiating the different places where we come from, mm-hmm. and putting those places at the center of the work. For instance, another example I could give you that's very clear to what's happening in the center right now is we don't have very many women of color who identify as queer on our collective. So we're looking for community members and center members, mm-hmm. meaning women who've already engaged in some of the work at the center, to be part of our collective around their identities of being queer women of color. That experience, I experience that myself, I'm mm-hmm. having myself right now, as a queer woman of color, it's important to have these perspectives, and multiple perspectives, not just Deb representing the one queer woman of color, right?
Yeah.
But we're also not looking for just like one or two people to represent an identity. That's impossible, and that's a massive setup for people, right? So we're looking for critical mass. We're looking for women of color to run the organization. We're looking for lesbian, queer, bisexual women to run the organization. We're looking for allies to be in a real place of recognizing their allyship and supporting the work, supporting the survivorship, supporting the different places where marginalized women, oppressed women experience, like are going to experience some sort of level of power in decision making and power of supporting other survivors in the organization. So while it sounds really complex, like it's actually really about the fact that, you know, every year we do two trainings for, say, crisis line counselors, mm-hmm. and we get a vast, like, so many different perspectives, so many different people wanting to do this work, and we want to include their perspectives, we want them to lead in supporting survivors from their perspectives, their multiple different places of power, privilege, oppression, marginalization. At the same time, we also have a very clear way of how we do the work, right? Mm-hmm. We don't do the same work as distress centers. We don't do the same work as other violence against women agencies. We run as a collective, number one. We run from a place of consensus. So for us, that's really important. We also don't consider ourselves therapists. We're peer counselors. Mm-hmm. So we come from a place of, A, women are the best decision makers for themselves. Mm-hmm. You're the one who's living your life. Number two, survivor-centered. Survivors, we all relate as survivors in some way. We can't always relate with other women's experiences, mm-hmm. but we're coming from a peer place rather than counselor client, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's these different pieces. I mean, even just the language we use at the center is often different than other agencies, organizations. So when it comes down to identity politics, for us, it's about recognizing our places of power and privilege and leading from those places. Being able to be a true ally mm-hmm. means recognizing our places of privilege with other groups, right?
So when you say your language is different, what do you mean?
Well, I think that I run into a lot of places that call women victims, mm-hmm. and we don't use that word. We use survivor. We also don't want to call women clients.
Yeah.
So we call them the women we're working with. So, or the woman, you know, or my woman. sometimes the word we use, that would be the indicator of the person that we're working with in a counseling relationship. Mm-hmm. So, or the caller. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're talking about somebody on the line. So for us, it's also about, because so much of our politics and our you know, the community around activism, specifically even activism around anti-violence, anti-rape movement stuff, which I see is very much part of many different movements, poverty movements, LGBT movements, like, these are all violence movements are part of every single movement, you know? Mm-hmm. So anti-violence movements, that is. So for us, you know, being able to link how we see language mm-hmm. in terms of how we do activism or do politics, mm-hmm. for me, it's one of the same, right?
So for people who don't understand, explain the difference between the term victim and survivor.
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
So I think that, I mean, it's very much sort of in the words themselves, you know. Victims, you know, police call women victims, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a place of empowerment. It's not a place of being able to leave the woman with how much work now she has to do because she's experienced violence. So when I say she, I'm also talking about men, women, children, trans people, but you're going to hear me say she often because it's often women who are coming to the center, and we all know statistically it's women and marginalized groups that are experiencing the most violence. So when we hear the word victim, we're often hearing it from courts, like legal system stuff, medical systems, the police, you know, and those are not necessarily places of empowerment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I haven't used that word up until now, and the center itself is a place of, we are already strong, and then violence happens to us, right? And now we're also put in a place very much by the legal system and medical system and other systems, institutions, put in a place of, like, we're not strong, really, like we're weak and this has happened to us.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, most of the world tells us it's happened to us because of something we did as women, right? So it's our fault in some way, or that we need to be personally accountable. It's not a system that's accountable for institutional violence, but rather an individual situation where you're accountable personally.
Mm-hmm.
As a worker, as a counselor in the center, I'm often confronted with women's self-blame.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling like we have to fix it on our own, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, men are not accountable for what they did, and the system's not accountable for making them accountable, right? Police, legal, medical, whatever, right? So, for me, we use the word survivor because it is a place of empowerment for women. Women are often left with a ton of work that they didn't want to do, you know. Now they're having to go through legal proceedings if they so choose. If they do choose, it's usually not what they expected it was going to be, i.e. they're often disappointed by how they're treated by police and by the legal, by once they get to court, so by lawyers and by judges and by, like, you know, justice of the peace and whoever they, like, run into in terms of activating accountability around the legal system. And it's not an empowering place, like being a survivor, you know what I mean? So even just the word victim tells you that, like, you're in this place where you can't do anything about it. This was done to you, right? And the sad thing is that it's not necessarily in our power to stop violence, because if it was, we would.
Yeah.
You know? So survivor says, once this has happened to you, where is your power to be able to move from this place? A victim of this happened to me now, you know? And so I don't know what the difference between the actual definitions of the words are.
Yeah.
But we use the word survivor so much as we were already strong before this happened, and maybe this happened and we feel weaker. And there's this idea that we're weak or we're strong based on the fact that violence happens to us. Like, those things are not even really into play. Like, pretty much you are disempowered when violence happens to you. And how do you as a survivor get that power back, you know? Knowing that you can't make it so this never happened to you, you know? You can't go back, right? So this is something that you live with and negotiate and manage every day. So a victim speaks to some things that don't really reflect how we see survivors in the center, you know? Survivors are already bringing so much, you know? I don't really, as a counselor, feel like I do that much for women. Women are powerful. Women are the ones who make the decisions for themselves. Women are the ones who walk out of this room and are going to have to live their life again. I, myself, as a survivor, have to figure out my stuff over and over again, day in, day out. Yes, I get support from others, and that's what I do as a counselor, as an advocate, as an activist. I support people, among many other things. But at the end of the day, us survivors have to figure out where we're going to find our power again, you know. So that's what I feel like we do at the center. That's what I feel like the definition, the difference between these words are.
Okay. So if someone wanted to get involved, how would they do that?
When I call the center.
Okay.
They say, I want to get involved. And you can figure out what that looks like for you. We have lots of different places where survivors, volunteers, can support any organization. Right now we have our biggest fundraiser of the year coming up, our 17th annual Bowl-a-thon.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even think of me plugging that until just now. But so join a team, support a team, give us money. The work in so many ways goes to survivors, because, you know, everybody, especially in the context of, you know, the recent earthquake in Haiti, everyone needs money. Every Toronto organization, nonprofit, collective, charity, what have you, is looking for money because of the climate. But there's also and I know this is not the question you asked me, but let me speak to the fact that so many people are not able to give to organizations, and we're still, because of crisis, because of like this kind of economic downturn, and because of where money is going to, based on like the government and you know, private funders and blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. We're all dealing with a lot less money, and we're all dealing with an increase of people asking for support from us. You know, so there's this real balance, right? So, whatever you can do to give or to support in this community, I think often people see the center as a place that deals only in rape or deals only in sexual violence. But because we come from an identity perspective, we work with so many different pieces. Violence is in every single community, despite your identity, right? Whether you're the most, quote-unquote, privileged or the most, quote-unquote, oppressed, which, of course, we know that doesn't even exist, right? So at the end of the day, violence touches every one of our lives, and I think we can all agree to that. So even supporting the center around creating a team and registering your team, or supporting the center by someone coming to you and saying, I'm on a team and I need to support, and giving that $2, mm-hmm. you know, that's where, what we're doing right now currently. That's the current climate of the center in terms of my biggest fundraiser of the year. Volunteers can, that's one way volunteers can support. Volunteers can also call the center and work on our front desk. Mm-hmm. They can also come to our volunteer orientation happening on Saturday, April 10th, location to be announced, at 10 to 1 p.m. to orient themselves to becoming a volunteer, so their first little session. Volunteers can engage themselves. I think one of the best things about the center as well is that people are always coming up with creative ways to support survivors, right? So we have women who are wanting to do yoga for survivors in the center when they come in. Right now we have a Latin American women's group that happens every Friday where you can come in and support the work, but you can also just come in as a Spanish-speaking recreational group and create art, mm-hmm. and like do something around empowerment and feeling good and a different way of healing, because it doesn't always come in the package of a counselor. It doesn't always come in the package of a crisis line, right, to support your own healing or to support other people in the center. Mm-hmm. So there's multiple different ways, and I think the great thing about the center is we're very open. We have so many amazing community members who are constantly calling and looking for different ways of how their art or how their skills can support different survivors. So it doesn't have to be in a search package of you have to volunteer like this. Like, call the center, present your idea. Like, I'm pretty sure that if you want to support survivor, that we want to support you to do that, you know? So it's just a question of time. So, yeah.
Okay, so there's about 7 minutes left. Is there anything else you would like to say or just tell us about or add?
Well, I would like to say that I am in awe of how many community members in my Toronto community support the work of the center. And I, for those who are listening, like, for those who even engage in listening to radio and doing radio, I want to thank you for coming and asking me to do this piece. I'm in awe of how many people recognize that violence touches us all and how important it is to support this work, because it supports like multiple levels of work. I mean, for example, we do work with women inside, so work for women in prison who've been incarcerated or involved in the law in any way. Like, some people might see that as, you know, these are women who have been convicted, right? And so many liberal organizations wouldn't say that this is important work. And at the same time, it's the very radical basis of seeing these women as important survivors, women who have something to contribute because of their experiences of being involved or having been incarcerated, you know? So these women have something to say. These women need to be at the center and the forefront of any activist movement, never mind an anti-violence movement, right? So that's what I'd like to say. I'd like to say putting survivors at the center of things is our aim and our goal, and we see all women as strong based on their experiences in the world, so... Yeah. We want to continue supporting empowerment.
Okay. Thank you very much, Deb, for talking with me.
Thank you, Kelly.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to OCAP Radio. What you were hearing was Superior by Polaroid Millennium. And before that, we brought you a piece about the Toronto Rape Crisis Center. And we did that to highlight some issues of women facing domestic violence and how that relates to poverty and the struggle of women. And we did that because International Women's Day is coming up. That's going to be held this Saturday. Saturday, March 6th. And there will be a rally and a march at Wasey Auditorium. That's 252 Bloor Street West. The rally will be at 11 a.m. and the march will be at 1 p.m. and followed by a fair at 1:30 p.m. at Ryerson University. So that's Saturday, March 6th, International Women's Day. For more information, you can look at www.iwdtoronto.org. And for tables at the fair, you can contact equity at rsuonline.ca. So if you're interested in helping to organize that or having a table there, check out those two sources. And also, there is a call out for artists and performers for the International Women's Day Cultural Evening, which is Friday, March 5th. That's the night before the march. And the theme for that is the struggle of women here and abroad, migrant women in solidarity against imperialism. And the Migrant Women Coordinating Body for International Women's Day is organizing this event and are inviting artists, graphic designers, performance artists, dancers, singers, poets, spoken word performers, and writers to take part in this important evening of celebration and resistance. So that's on Friday, March 5th, and it'll be held at the Steelworkers Hall at 25 Cecil Street at Spadina and College from 7 to 11. If you'd like to be a part of that, if you have any performances or any other participation, you can contact Kelly O'Sullivan at kellyowarrior@hotmail.com. Or call 416-529-9600. And the objective of the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body is to build a more visible anti-imperialist migrant women's contingent at this year's International Women's Day events. It's very important for them to increase the visibility of migrant women as they bring forward their issues and struggles, as well as joining the struggle of Canadian women. And if you'd like more information on that, you can contact Cynthia Palmaria at 647-204-5908. And in other updates news, you just heard, if you were listening, No One Is Illegal Radio brought you a piece about the Vancouver Olympics. That's happening right now. That's the current circus going on. And as many people know, maybe know, maybe don't know, the G8 and G20 summits are going to be held here in Southern Ontario in June of this year. And if you would like to help organize for resistance to that, there will be the third Community Mobilization Network open planning meeting will be held on this Sunday, February 24th. That's at 11 a.m. The meeting is expected to run for 2 hours and will be held again at the Steelworkers Hall at 25 Cecil Street. And its community-based organizers and activists from across Ontario and Quebec are invited to an open planning meeting focusing on Toronto's response to the G8 and G20 summits here. And they will be organizing community-based outreach, indie media, convergence, and days of action leading up. And I believe there's also a Facebook group. So that's it for our program tonight here on OCAP Radio. Thanks for listening to us on CKLN 88.1. As always, I'd like to thank our tech, Mark, who does a wonderful job, help from Deborah and Kristen and Susie here at CKLN. And up next is Ventana Albario with Susie. We'll be coming up next, and that's it. And good night from myself and Kelly Bentley.
Good night.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.